This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you're keeping track, this week marks another step in Vermont's plan to have universal recycling and composting. The law has been phased in over time, and many earlier steps may just seem like a part of life now. Things like trash haulers being required to pick up recycling alongside garbage. That's been in effect for 2 years. Recyclable materials are already banned from landfills, so what's left? Well, a big piece of the puzzle here is how to make sure organic material, yard waste, food scraps, things like that, also stay out of our landfills. But for many people and for lots of solid waste districts, that's a tougher nut to crack. On July 1st, all transfer stations and drop-off facilities must accept food scraps, and big food scrap generators of 18 tons a year, or a third of a ton a week, are no longer allowed to send compostable materials to the landfill. That's assuming they have a place to send their organics within 20 miles of their location. This is all leading up to 2020, when food scraps will be banned from landfills altogether, and that means households will need to compost too. So today we're going to have another of our wildly popular shows where we have experts in to answer your burning questions about trash, compost, and recycling. Michelle Morris is Assistant Waste Reduction Manager and Business Outreach Coordinator for the Chittenden Solid Waste District. And Josh Kelly is Materials Management Section Chief in the Department of Environmental Conservation's Solid Waste Program. Those are a lot of words. Basically, they're both experts about Vermont's recycling law and about how to make this work in your own household. Josh and Michelle, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So I said that July 1st is this new step, the next step in our universal recycling law. And Josh, did I get it right? Basically, big compost generators are going to have to be composting. It's sort of a step down here. The very biggest, like hospitals, had to do it a while ago. And now a third of a ton a week people, that's not my household, luckily, will have to do it. And right. What else? What are the phases that we're working on here?
You pretty much hit the nail on the head. The next phase for producers of food waste is the one third ton per week generator, and it's cumulative, so it's 18 tons per year. That would be a restaurant with a high amount of throughput would be one way to think about it. Maybe a smaller grocery store. There are some smaller ones around the state. And they're really triggered if they're within 20 miles of a facility that's willing and able to accept their materials. And we have about 10 of those facilities around the state. Most are composters. We have 8 certified composters that accept food scraps and are really processing the majority of the food waste in the state right now. We have one fully permitted anaerobic digester that's doing that at Vermont Technical College.
But the other piece of the law going into effect on Saturday is that transfer stations and drop-off centers will now have to accept compostable materials. So doesn't that put every restaurant, every grocery store within 20 miles, or is it that they don't have to accept that big composter?
Yes. And the transfer stations are really, I mean, many of them, the majority probably serve residential customers, and that's who they're supposed to be serving. The same customers they serve for trash is who they need to serve for recycling services, which they've all done since for a long time. And then now food scraps is the next phase. So many of them don't accept from the larger commercial size generators. But that's part of the state's initiative to make it easier for people to do this. And we just recently, in partnership with the High Meadows Fund, released about almost $100,000 to support both compost drop-off, food scrap drop-off at your transfer stations, and home composting in terms of grants that reduce the cost of buying a home compost bin through your solid waste district or your town or your local line. So those are 50% off home compost bins that we've been able to put forth.
Originally in the law, trash haulers were supposed to be required to pick up compost starting this year too, but that's been pushed back a year. Why?
There was a concern from several solid waste haulers at the legislature this year that was, I think, too soon, and some of them really wanted just continuing doing what they're doing. There was testimony taken at the Senate Natural Resources and Energy Committee about this, and as a result, the legislature pushed back that requirement to give them another year to comply.
Michelle, transfer stations, drop-off centers that now are required to have or to accept compostable materials, aren't required to do it for free, right, under this law. I mean, right now, every other Saturday, so in a couple of days, it's my day to go to the transfer station, and I know that I'm going to pay for garbage and that my recycling is basically, it's not exactly free, but it's no extra charge. It's all sort of baked into the system. Composting, how does that fit in?
Right. So I just want to add that in Chittenden County, all restaurants and businesses are within 20 miles of Green Mountain Compost. So you're
just
not
FYI.
Off the hook. Just FYI, letting you know. And to put it in sort of real people terms, that 18 tons a year equates to about 2 to 3 big carts a week.
Of food scraps only.
Yeah. So we have lots and lots and lots of restaurants and businesses in Chittenden County that meet that threshold and are doing it. We have 250 listed on our website, schools and businesses and institutions already.
That are already doing this.
Already diverting food scraps one way or another, whether they have to or not. So I just want to work that in. As far as your question, yes, that's right. They don't have to do this for free, those that accept them, because nothing's free, really. And you mentioned the recycling. What we've done is a long time ago, we, as you say, baked that into the cost for trash. So people who are bringing lots of trash are covering some of the cost of that recycling. And we're doing the same thing with food scraps now. It's going to be $1.50 for up to 5 gallons of food scraps brought to our drop-off centers. And we were really torn about that because a lot of people are doing this for the first time. But we need to let folks know that there is expense associated with this. And if you bring it to Green Mountain Compost out in Williston on Redmond Road, there's no fee. That's because that's where we have to bring it from all of our locations, and we have to pay for that service.
And do you think people will be okay with that, that charge for composting?
Well, I think some will, some won't. Some are dedicated and committed. Just like anything, you've got your bell curve. You know, you can make it really, really hard, and some people are going to do it anyway, and you can make it really, really easy, and some never will. And, you know, we're trying to make it as easy as we can within the constraints and expenses that we have.
Listeners, we're talking today about recycling and composting. We've gotten a lot of questions before the show, and we're going to get right to them. Abby says, how can we best support people to not put food scraps in the trash, especially if they don't have access to backyard composting, don't wish to pay for curbside compost collection, and don't have a compost facility close by? What other options might there be? Do towns have an obligation or a role in creating local, small-scale community composting facilities? Josh?
It's a great question. I think the state is really trying to make sure people have the three options, if possible, and that's composting at home, drop-off, and possibly curbside services. We see those services growing, but it's slow. There's a question about demand. Abby's question is good. I want to be clear that towns don't have a requirement to provide this service unless they operate a transfer station. And they don't necessarily, it's not a requirement in the law that every town have a composting facility. That's not part of it. Generally, the state has a good distribution of composting locations all across the state. So the town transfer stations are usually partnering with them to send the material there. I think to Abby's question, it's that we're seeing some initiative to have neighbors join together with as sort of a community composting model where they compost together, like at a community garden. And I think that's one way that it's a low barrier to entry. If you don't really have space or you don't really know how to do it, you can work with your neighbors to do that. I think the drop-off has been growing in popularity. We've seen from the data that we collected in 2014 to 2015, so for that year, there's been a 15% increase in food scrap composting alone at our commercial scale composting facilities. So that's coming in through transfer stations from drop-offs. It's also coming in from the commercial sector. That's a significant jump. So people are paying attention and things are starting to shift.
All right. We had one question that we knew we would get and you knew we would get because it always comes up. So I am going to preempt any further comments on this and questions, although, you know, people can continue the conversation online. But this is the kitty litter question.
Yay!
John wrote in to say, the overwhelming majority of my trash by weight is from cat litter. I have suggested that some method of composting be established for the very heavy product, but there doesn't seem to be any interest in getting into the cat litter composting business. Ideally, what is the best solution for disposing of used litter? John says about 20 pounds per cat per week equals over 1,000 pounds per cat per year. Michelle, you want to tackle it?
Oh, sure. Give it to me. Yeah, kitty litter, pet waste, I have the same dilemma. I happen to use a wood shaving product, and I live on some property, and so that's what I do. I just scatter it. But I have just one cat, and if you have a significant amount and you don't live somewhere like that, then it has to go in the trash. There are some composting systems and options that people have explored. We don't have any data and field experience with that that demonstrates that they perform as claimed. You know, you want to kill. There's a lot of pathogens, things that can make you sick in pet waste. So you don't want to be handling it. You don't want it concentrated in one area. You don't want to challenge your groundwater or anything else that might be contaminated. So you need to manage it carefully. And the trash is the preferred default option, unfortunately, at this time. And like I said, there are some people looking at other alternative methods, but we don't have any data on how effective that is.
We did get a note from Janet who says, I have a composter for kitty litter, and I use corn/wheat litter. Now, I don't know if Janet means that she's composting or has a, like a...
Yeah, there's thing. There's some called doggy doolies. There's another in-ground unit, and basically they work by concentrating heat. Of course, on the interwebs, you can find plans for making your own if you're so inclined. I haven't seen the Pinterest page yet on this, but I'm sure there is one. And it just really concentrates the sun's heat and gets it to such a high temperature that it kills any organisms and bacteria and it degrades the material until it essentially disappears.
So there are ways, but...
That's my understanding. But again, we don't have hard and fast data that shows it's been tested and renders these things.
And if somebody wanted to use wood shavings like you do but don't have a place to dump them, can they put them in their composting materials, their yard scraps, or do you say those still need to go in the trash because they have cat pee and poop?
Right. So again, it's the pathogens. It's the critters on there, E. coli and other things that could make somebody sick if it was handled, especially if you're vulnerable to that. So you definitely don't want it in your backyard. It doesn't get nearly hot enough. We don't want it at our composting facility because we don't want to expose our workers and other folks to those materials.
Okay, tangential to cat pee is a question from Roger who says, please tell me, if you use human urine to fertilize your garden, will it damage your groundwater?
That's a question for Josh, clearly.
Boy, we're getting into all of it now. I think everything in moderation. I'm not a wastewater expert by any means, but everything, one of the first rules of ecology is everything goes somewhere. And so, with regard to human urine, as with anything, nutrients can have an impact. I leave that really to the DEC wastewater folks to really get the further detail on it. But that's my
all right,
response.
John. So Roger doesn't get a complete answer to that question.
I think Charlie Nardozzi needs to address that issue.
Next garden show, we'll pose that
there
to Charlie. All right, we got it. Let's go to Craig, who's calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Craig. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if we're being charged a fee when we drop off compost. And the compost is being taken to Green Mountain Compost, and they are selling it. Are they retail or are they nonprofit? Could you talk about the fee structure and how you arrived at it?
Sure. So we are government. It's government owned. It's Green Mountain Compost is owned by the Chittenden Solid Waste District.
So it's part of your organization?
It is part of our organization, correct. We're a municipal district. And it costs about $1 million a year to run that facility. We're conducting a business analysis on it right now to see if we're being as efficient and as effective as we can and how we should proceed going forward with that. There's virtually no compost operations in the country or Canada that we know of that aren't subsidized if they're government run. The private operations tend to have other things that they do, like they have chicken flocks or they are in the hauling business to supplement that because it's not an easy business to run. We do sell our products, and that's one of the ways we pay for operating expenses. There is still a small percentage that we subsidize via our solid waste management fee, which is part of our revenue structure. It's not a state tax. It's not a local tax. It's a fee charged on tons of trash disposed. So, the costs we charge for anything that our customers bring us are charged in order to cover our costs. We always make things as inexpensive and cost-effective as we can. But we need to recognize that there are costs involved. So the $1.50 a bucket cost is in part to cover the expenses that we incur.
Is Green Mountain Composting in the black or in the red? I mean, because it could go back and subsidize other parts of Chittenden Solid Waste District, but on its own, is it profitable?
Right. On its own, it's still being subsidized. Right.
Good. Okay, so Jean's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Jean. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for doing this program, because I've had a lot of questions about how to go about this when we finally are required to compost. I live in Burlington, and I have composted for years, but not particularly effectively. It's not like I, you know, can heat up a pile very well or whatever. My big concern is if we're all traveling to a drop-off center, I'm concerned about the carbon in the air from all of us traveling to a drop-off center with our compost. And it, right now, currently, there's 110 households in my neighborhood. A few people are composting, but having somebody for $5 a pail or something like that pick up weekly. So you have cars, different cars coming into the neighborhood. We have our trash haulers. We have about five different trash haulers coming into our neighborhood. I just feel like it generates a lot of carbon to do this, and so we might be trading things off.
It's a great question, and one that comes up, off and on in our debate about the way we're shifting, where we're going with our materials, because we're really trying to change the dynamic about them being waste. I think from the fundamentally, what I would say is, what the state and what our solid waste districts, alliances, and towns are working to do is to maximize the benefits from our materials that we don't have a use for anymore and minimize the negative impacts. So the caller is right that, you know, you can compost at home, but not everything composts well. And one thing I want to make clear to the residential listeners on the show is that if they compost at home after 2020 and even before, they can throw out meat and bones in the trash. The law actually says if you're composting at home, you can dispose of meat and bones. So right away, there's no requirement that you have to compost those items. If you bring to a drop-off, generally all the composters in Vermont, because of the hot temperatures in their piles, they take all of that stuff. In regard to the emissions from the multiple vehicles, generally speaking, the greenhouse gas emission savings, methane is a greenhouse gas that's released in the landfill when food scraps are landfilled, and it is 20 times or 25 times more damaging than carbon dioxide, a major greenhouse gas. So we understand that there are inefficiencies in our waste system, and this goes for trash too. There's multiple trash haulers on the same street in many places, and many people like that because they like that choice. And the state doesn't have, you know, we're not pushing in either direction on that. It's really something that Vermonters have decided is the way they want to go. Some towns do contract for a service provider, and that's the way some towns organize. In the case of food scrap collection, haulers have the flexibility to contract with each other. So if they don't want to provide the service, they can sub it out. Those are ways that it can be more efficient. But generally speaking, we don't want to see any more greenhouse gas emissions than anyone else. And many people with the drop-off option do it on their way to work or on their way back. I mean, they're doing it when they're doing other things in most of our experience. Or they're bringing all of their materials, their trash, their recycling, and their food scraps to these drop-offs. So they don't even use curbside service.
Yeah, and we have examples of neighborhoods that have gotten together and said, hey, we don't like having all these trucks up and down our road. Let's get together and hire the same company. So, you know, nothing stopping neighborhoods from doing that if that's how they want to proceed. And we survey our drop-off center users every other year, and it does show what Josh said, that they're doing these errands on their way out and about anyway.
We are talking with Michelle Morris, Assistant Waste Reduction Manager and Business Outreach Coordinator for Chittenden Solid Waste District, and Josh Kelly, Materials Management Section Chief at the Department of Environmental Conservation's Solid Waste Program. And let's tick through a few questions that are very specific. So Cindy in Milton says, when will Vermont be ready to recycle styrofoam, and can you please explain which freezer containers can be recycled?
Oh, so this is a quick one. So freezer containers, this is Chittenden County only, okay? So for Milton, that would include Milton. Freezer containers if the food is not in direct contact with the paper, all right? So if you've got a
plastic
Weight
wrapping.
Watchers or Lean Cuisine or some other brand of freezer meal and there's a plastic liner and then there's just a box around it, recycle the box. period. You're fine. But not if it's an ice cream carton with ice cream directly against the paper. There's lots of reasons for that, but that's the quick answer. With regards to styrofoam, the quick answer is it's 98% air, and so that makes it really light, and you can have a box truck full, and it weighs 200 pounds, and it makes no sense to be shipping that around the country to markets. We're always looking at possibilities, and there might be something not too far down the road, but right now we don't have an option for it.
And maybe you should tackle pizza boxes too, because my understanding is that has changed in recent years.
So in general, if a pizza box has, the technical term is schmutz, I think, on it.
Mm-hmm. You know, the scientific.
It is. It is. It's a jargon technical term. The cheese and stuff stuck to it. We don't want that. That's contamination. If it has a little bit of grease on it, that'll just get kind of absorbed in the system. What we're really looking for is clean cardboard. So you can always rip off the lid, recycle that. The bottom, if it's relatively grease-free, go ahead, put it in the recycling. If it's got a lot of that other food stuff on it, compost it.
So you can compost the cardboard.
Boom, you're done.
Yeah. How about another one here? Alex, I understand I can recycle junk mail envelopes. What about padded envelopes? Yellow envelopes which have bubble wrap-like padding inside it. Also, one of the recycling booklets I have says these envelopes are not recyclable. Also, is plastic bubble wrap recyclable? I prefer to reuse, but at this point I have more than enough.
All right, so I'll take this. Reuse everything you can, right? And if you can't reuse your packaging like bubble wrap, many of the shipping stores, Pack and Ship, UPS, etc., they will gladly take that. We have a list on our website, cswd.net. Look it up and take it there. Any material that is multiple materials stuck together, like the envelope with the bubble wrap stuck to it, or a Tetra Pak, a container that has many layers of plastic and paper and aluminum foil, that's really hard stuff to manage for recycling because you got to separate all those different layers in order to capture the stuff you want. That's why we don't accept it for recycling.
Good. You already sort of answered Anna in Burlington's question about Tetra Paks, but she says, what is the deal with them? They're supposedly environmentally friendly lined boxes that nut milks, prepared soups, broths are frequently packaged with. And Anna says, I think they say recyclable where facilities exist. I've contacted Chittenden County Solid Waste District to inquire about proper disposal. And to my knowledge, there are no facilities in Vermont that will recycle these. Is that true? If so, why are they so popular when alternatives like plastic bottles and aluminum cans are recyclable just about anywhere?
Yeah, so packaging is a big deal here. It's a big deal everywhere. And the packaging landscape is evolving and changing. I mean, who knew baby food would come in a pouch? But there it is. So,
can you recycle those pouches?
Not here. We want rigid plastic containers and packaging. And call us if you're not sure. We'll answer your question. Pouches and Tetra Paks and things like that are really environmentally effective for things like shipping materials. They're light. They the product doesn't degrade, so it makes it shelf stable longer. They have lots and lots of benefits. The problem comes on the waste stream end. Problem is a lot of the materials recovery facilities, the recycling centers and sorting facilities are made with technology that's from the 70s, 80s, 90s. That technology is evolving. We're looking at potential partnerships with manufacturers and people who use these kinds of packaging so that they can fund research into the best ways to capture those materials. Until we get there, that's a big no on those materials. But, you know, someday we're going to need a MRF, a recovery facility that can handle those materials.
Josh Mason says, a question regarding recycling regulations. Can the state create a printed quick reference laminated card showing visually what goes where and then distribute these cards to all Vermonters?
That's a great question. The closest thing we have is our landfill disposal ban poster, and that's mainly used with transfer stations and haulers. Because we're at the state level, we count a lot on our solid waste districts to give that guidance on what's recyclable, and also because it differs in each region. We, with the Universe Recycling Law, we focused on the statewide six, and we had some branding around that, some advertising that went with that, because what the state has done is banned from disposal the most commonly easily recyclable materials. So that's your for plastics, which is always up for debate because there's so many of them, it's plastics number one and two, and it's hard plastics. So that's pretty much your soda bottle, your water bottle, and your milk jugs are the number ones and number twos, generally speaking. There's a couple
detergent.
Others. Yeah, laundry detergent is a few. There's even some clamshells that are plastic that are number one. And then we had metal cans, aluminum cans, aluminum foil. We added in cardboard and paper. And paper is everything from mail, as one of your callers was asking about, but just paper mail, magazines and books, you know, like a phone book and things like that.
So glossy magazines you can recycle?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So any paper, anything that's just paper?
Correct.
Okay. So the laminated card, Michelle, if you got one of those, if the state were to provide it and then you wanted to be done with it, could you recycle it?
Absolutely not.
So laminated.
So we try not to laminate things because it you can't recycle it once. You've got, again, it's plastic coating over paper, and you can't separate those things. 802recycles.com is a great website to go no matter where you live in the state, and just plug in the name of your town and you'll find out what the requirements are in your local area. CSWD.net serves Chittenden County, or call our hotline and we'll help you out for us.
Joe asks, can paper be composted?
Yes, it can. I compost paper towels at my house regularly. And as Michelle was just talking about, pizza boxes can be composted if they have too much schmutz on them. So yes, but it depends on the paper and what's on it. So your paper cups are typically lined with plastic liners. Even sugar packets have usually a micro thin layer of plastic, because in case they get wet, they want that sugar to stay dry. So so it gets nuanced depending on the material type. But in general, paper is a great way to manage your home compost bin, to be adding dry carbon materials to your wet food scrap nitrogen materials. So I often encourage people to have some newspapers on hand. Try not to use the glossy ones, but just the regular newsprint, even if it has some color, is usually fine. Rip it up and throw it in your compost bin, especially in the spring. That will help your composting bugs do their job.
Grace is calling in from Barnett. Hi, Grace. Go right ahead.
Jane, thanks for taking my call. I am a former board member of the former Highfield Center for Composting, which Josh was an employee of at one time. And we went under partly because the viability of food scrap composting is just not there without a subsidy, as Green Mountain Compost gets. And I have an idea that would help address that problem, as well as the problem of water pollution in the lakes from fertilizer runoff, which is tax heavily the nitrate and phosphate synthetic fertilizers that farmers overapply, and use that money to subsidize their purchase of compost from food scrap composters. How would that be? Who's going to push for that?
It's a great idea. And I think with DEC's water quality initiatives, we, and also our universal recycling goals, we're really looking to support food scrap composting along the lines of what you're talking about in terms of markets for compost. I don't work specifically on the regulations for the water quality initiative. I think many farmers actually do take care with their manure to apply it in a sound environmental way, but that's, you know, there's exceptions to everything. And we do find some of the major markets for compost in Vermont is our own agricultural industry, and which is just constantly growing. And Michelle maybe can talk more about that with regard to Green Mountain Compost and where your products are sold.
Sure. So our compost products, bulk and bagged, are sold all over Vermont, as well as New England and New York. And one thing I'd like to emphasize is, if we reduce our waste in the first place, you know, stop throwing this stuff out, we will need less facilities in the long run. So, you know, we always need to look upstream. Don't focus everything on recycling and composting. Look at what it's dollar bills in the trash or dollar bills in the compost. You know, there is research that shows people waste more if they know that there's a recycling or composting option, which is not what we're going for here. So, you know, really shop conscientiously, understand what your needs are, store it properly. We have some guidance on that on our website as well. But look upstream. Let's reduce the waste so we don't need all these facilities and incur all these costs.
Yeah, to that note, Mary says, we as a world society need to refuse to use plastic. Don't buy things with excessive packaging. Refuse to suck through a straw. Refuse plastic bags at the checkout. She says, practice the four R's: refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and of course, compost. Let's go to John calling in from Alberg. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just calling in to make a comment. Recently moved to Vermont from New York, and we called to switch our trash service over. We use Casella, which is a large trash company. And we were a little shocked to find out that the recycling program here, they only pick up twice a month, as opposed to in New York, where they pick up every week with the normal trash pickup. And we just thought that was a little odd that they, wouldn't pick up every week. And so, we do produce more recycling than trash, and, kind of hope to see the reverse of picking up recycling every week and, maybe not so much trash. But, just calling with that comment. And, like I said, that was an interesting thing that I noticed moving here. Being such a green state, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, John, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Josh, one of the things that does come up sort of with John's point is that it's different in different communities. It's different in different solid waste districts. There are different facilities. There are different ways that haulers are doing it. So there's not sort of – there's not a one-size-fits-all in Vermont, but there's also not – just a universal way that everybody who might want to recycle and compost everything is going to be able to do it right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when people want more service, it's pretty common. And I would say that in Vermont, we have a lot of economies of scale challenges. And when you're in a rural place, the most affordable way for the hauler to provide service is to do it on less frequent basis. The highest cost you pay for the hauling of any material, trash, recyclables, compost, whatever it is the trucking of it. It's the moving of it. There are tip fees at the landfill. There are fees at the MRF for recycling collection. They're generally less than the landfill fee. But the trucking is what is the key. And so certainly in that caller's area, they can ask their other neighbors if they want to try and, show the haulers what the services they would like and advocate for those. That's the best way to find someone who's willing to come more frequently, maybe. But I have the same issue. My recyclables fill up faster than my trash, mainly by volume, because they're just so bulky. So it happens to all of us.
We got a note from Jess who says, the problem with Vermont and composting is that you need to maintain your compost. I now have two completely full composters, the Chittenden Solid Waste District ones, subsidized in my yard with material that I still can't use for my garden because I can't keep up. The material hasn't broken down. My compost is chronically moldy and bugs and vermin come to my yard. I've been a single parent since this law was announced and only barely stopped beating myself up for not composting anymore. I earn half what the average household with kids earns and have half the labor available to me. So paying more for pickup is a hardship that seems crazy to me for a law that's geared towards a certain kind of Vermonter. The maintenance this law requires is just not possible for me to keep up with. So basically, Jess is asking, well, how are we going to do this? How are we going to make it easy for people to do this, not harder, when what you want is compliance with composting, which, again, for households will go into effect in 2020?
Yeah, the first thing I'd say is for a single parent with kids, it is tough. I mean, it's seriously tough. And adding compost on top is, definitely one more thing that they have to think about. And I completely get that. I think what I encourage, I sort of think of a lazy person compost method, which I use, which is to use a bin and empty it in around Halloween. So at Halloween, usually at the end of the summer, your food scraps have broken down most of the way. And I have a soil saver, which is those just generic black plastic ones. And I shovel it out and I spread it on my garden. And then I put it back and I have an empty unit to use for the rest of the winter when it tends to freeze up. We also have people who work with their community garden network to bring their stuff to those types of drop-offs. And then dropping off at your transfer station can be a lot easier. But it is an added thing, and I totally get that. We're really trying to make it easier for folks. The last thing is there is a green cone or solar cone. Michelle was talking about some of these earlier that people use to compost and sort of set it and forget it. And they're pretty easy to maintain units. That everything does go somewhere, and someday it might need to be dug up and moved. But I have friends who've had them for 5 years, and they put their food waste in, and it nurtures the soil in their flower beds. So,
all right, we got to go. But let me just ask Michelle one very, very quick, I hope, question. Is we've gotten a couple of questions from listeners who want to know what to do with invasive plants and composting.
Sure. So they can come, if you're in Chittenden County, they can come to Green Mountain Compost, or you can bring them if you work here and don't live here. The thing to do is put them in a bag, seal the bag, come bring it to Green Mountain Compost during our open hours, check in at the office, and they'll tell you where it needs to go. But you can absolutely bring invasive, noxious, diseased plants, all of that stuff, in a sealed plastic bag to GMC.
Separate it out from the other
stuff. Separate it out, bring it, let us know what you've got, and they'll direct you to the area.
And don't put it in your home composting.
Do not put it in your home composting. Doesn't get hot enough.
And that's exempt from the law, Josh, in 2020?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, this is food scraps only for the law.
Okay. Josh Kelly is Materials Management Section Chief in DEC's Solid Waste Program. Michelle Morris is Assistant Waste Reduction Manager and Business Outreach Coordinator at Chittenden Solid Waste District. I know you both want to come back quarterly. Listeners, let us know what you think. You have more questions? You want to do composting, recycling all the time like a bird show, like a garden show? Let us know what you think in the comments at Vermont Edition. That's at vpr.net. Thanks very much.
Thank you.